I did want to announce before we start this meeting that that the board has been meeting in executive session. We recessed our executive session, and we will return to executive session after this public meeting. I'm calling to order the 1,349th meeting of the Washington Metro Board of Directors. We start with a public comment period, and our first commenter is Michael Sindrum. Is Michael here? No, okay. Our second person on the list is Sarah Green. Sarah, would you come up to the podium up there, please?
Good morning. My name is Sarah Green. I'm the Advisory Neighborhood Commissioner for in the District of Columbia for the single-member district 4B01, and that includes the Tacoma Metro Station. For those of you who may not be familiar with our system, we are elected officials every 2 years on the ballot in the District of Columbia, and we have each about 2,000 constituents. I think you will see, I hope it was passed out to everyone, the resolution that we adopted at our public meeting the other day. And what we're asking you to do is to accept the art that you discussed a few days ago, last week, the extraordinary piece of public art that Mr. Sam Gilliam, one of our city's preeminent artists, will make for installation at the Metro Station. We're thrilled you're accepting it. The community spent about a year or more working on this piece. It's a fabulous gift from the DC Commission on the Arts and Humanities. What we're asking is to have that art installed in the underpass, in an underpass that is clean and having the concrete, the chipped concrete, repaired, and to make sure that the lighting, this is all throughout the underpass, is modern, up-to-date, and not dim and depressing as it is now, and in some places not functioning correctly. This is what we're asking. We understand the extraordinary financial pressure that you face. We understand the challenges that you face with respect to safety. However, we're hoping that you will see the link between the public's perception about safety and maintenance throughout the system and the benefit that you will obtain by investing a very modest amount of money in that underpass so that it matches the quality of that art throughout. And I think that the public's perception will give you the benefit that you need. When people come out and they see this really elegant, stunning piece of art, they will see an underpass, they will walk through an underpass and look at it, and they will see concrete that's repaired, concrete that isn't caked with pigeon droppings, and lighting that enhances that entire underpass as well as the art. We hope you can do this. We ask that you do this. And we thank you very much for your help. And know that the Metro system will continue to improve and wish you the best in the challenges that you face, because we do know how significant they are. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Green. And Mr. Pont, could you please just look into this one. First of all, just make sure that we actually have authority to do anything there. We may or may not own that right of way. And just look into what it would take to make sure that this artwork is properly displayed.
Peter.
Okay.
Peter.
Thank you very much. And Mr. Graham.
First, let me say that thank you very much, Commissioner, for your contribution. And I want to thank you on behalf of the DC members for your community's active and apparently lengthy engagement with this issue, but it is very exciting indeed to have art by Sam Gilliam in a Metro station. And I know a board member, Giancola, you know, is actually lives in the neighborhood there and has been very involved himself in all of this. And but it's wonderful to see this come to fruition in such an incredibly fine way. And as somebody who has supported art projects within our system over the years, I'm very enthusiastic about this aspect of our function here, and this is a really, truly fine addition. Thank you very much.
Mr. Giancola.
Yeah, I would like to ditto the comments of Board Member Graham, Council Member Graham. I want to add that Ms. Green has also submitted a letter or an email to myself, and staff is, in fact, reviewing that item right now and is going to have a response to it. One of the items, if you actually ever come to the Tacoma Station and go down the escalators from the upper level, as you come down the escalators, the current wall, which is a partial wall with opaque panels, would obscure the actual artwork. And I think one of the requests that had been made early on, and I had thought that it had already been incorporated, included putting clear panels in there so it could be seen as you're coming out the metro. So there are some enhancements. I think personally that possibly the Red Line rehab program for the stations could be modified. But I think Mr. Benjamin raises a good point. Some of the area is, in fact, owned by the railroad, the CSX, and we have to kind of work out possibly some agreements with them to incorporate some of these improvements, not necessarily the panels that I talked about, but certainly maybe some of the lighting. That being said, I certainly strongly support this artwork.
So, Mr. Pounder, if you could look into the issues, report back to the board as to what it will take.
Very well,
be very
Mr.
helpful.
Chairman.
I did want to point out to anybody who was looking at the rather sparse attendance on the other side of our table here that the general manager and many members of his staff have not been excused and are therefore attending the National Transportation Safety Board hearing, which is going on today, and I'm very pleased that I was excused and that I'm able to be here with the rest of the board members. Our second public commenter is Faith Wheeler.
Good morning. Good morning, WMATA board members. I'm also a commissioner of Advisory Neighborhood Commission and C4B. I'm particularly representing NC4BO2, which Mr. Giancola and I share, in fact, as residents. I'm the vice chair of the ANC4B. I'm also a member of the Citizens Advisory Committee of COG's Transportation Planning Board and a 31-year resident of Tacoma, D.C. I'm here to also thank WMATA for considering the installation of this wonderful mural funded by the D.C. Commission of Arts and Humanities. I hope you've had a chance to see an image of it. If not, we can send you one. I think you'll be absolutely stunned by its beauty. It's unbelievably wonderful. And I'm so glad that you share that impression with us. I also want to urge you to maintain the underpass so it will present a good image for Metro and to give this wonderful piece of art the respect that it deserves. This mural by Sam Gilliam, a D.C. native, internationally known, will bring more ridership to Metro, we're convinced, because it's such an amazing piece of art. And I think people will be coming both locally, nationally, and internationally to view this work, which will be, of course, an amazing benefit for WMATA, for the community, and for the city. Thank you very much. And I'd like to also add that this is an element, the element of maintenance of your facilities, I think is something that is so easy to overlook by any and every government agency. It's one of the last things on the list that boards and organizations like to think about and fund because it's long term, but it's so important, and as you, I think, know and understand, it also contributes to the fine operation and the safe operation of any agency. And so I really urge you to take that into consideration and incorporate that into very strongly into the culture of WMATA throughout. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Wheeler. Our next person is, I'm sorry, Mr. Graham. The button on the bottom. All the way in the front, as far as you can reach.
I just want to thank Commissioner Wheeler for coming here today. As many of you, I'm sure, know, Commissioner Wheeler is a regular contributor to our issues in the District of Columbia, particularly as they relate to transportation, but many other issues as well. And it's just great to see you, Commissioner, and we all are excited about this and share your excitement about this. And thank you again.
And Mr. Albert. Mr. Albert, are you here? David, there he is.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and members of the Board of Directors. My name is David Alpert. I run the website Greater Greater Washington, which writes about transit and other transportation and urban planning issues in the Washington, D.C. metro area. I want to thank Ms. Kissel, Mr. Brown, and the other members of their staff for providing a wide variety of options in the FY 2011 budget so that riders can weigh in on different possibilities for how to close the budget gap. When you approve your hearing notice, which I just found out I think is going to be next week, I would also urge you to include even more options, and I believe the staff have added some. In particular, to try to make sure we have some options to even the current inequalities in the budget proposal between bus and rail, which put more of the burden of fare increases on bus riders. Also to consider a higher peak of the peak charge for riders at the busiest times on the rail system when people are most able to absorb fare increases. A differential between paper fare cards and smart trips on rail, and also rates that might help ensure that people can park at even the most congested garages during busy times. More importantly, in order to close this budget gap, we are going to need contributions from the individual jurisdictions. A number of organizations are advocating for jurisdictional contributions totaling $73.7 million. Which will close the $40 million hole in the current budget and also remove the need for service cuts, which we all agree are not desirable. We appreciate the work of Arlington County in approving high enough tax and fee increases to make such a contribution possible and hope that all of the members will work with their individual jurisdictions so that we can achieve the same from all jurisdictions. I also ask the board to clarify or rescind the budget guidance that the staff seem to be interpreting to mean that they can't come out and specifically say that we need jurisdictional contributions. We need those, and I hope you will allow the staff to clearly say what is already evident fact to everyone. Transit has made immeasurable contributions to our region, and we need to do everything we can to maintain the quality of our transit, to maintain the economic competitiveness of all of the areas in the Washington region. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Alpert. David Kaplan.
Good morning, members of the board. I'm David Kaplan from Alexandria, Virginia. I appear before you today as a representative of the Transit First Coalition. The coalition is made up of over a dozen organizations representing transit riders, environmentalists, labor, and community groups throughout the D.C. metro area. Mr. Alpert is one of those members. Today we are calling on the member jurisdictions of WMATA, the governors of Virginia and Maryland, the D.C. mayor, and the federal government to do their fair share to solve next year's budget deficit. Instead of drastic cuts to service, we urge the governments to pay an additional $74 million to close the budget gap. We ask you to reject service cuts as a solution to the budget deficit. Cutting service is not a way to restore the confidence of your riders and Metro's reputation as a first-class transit system befitting our nation's capital. Transit First believes that jurisdictions must partner with riders to avoid service cuts. If riders accept fare increases, then the jurisdiction should close the rest of the gap through increased contributions. The proposed budget gap shows that $74 million in increased subsidy is needed to avoid these cuts. We make this request for additional subsidy very much aware of the unprecedented fiscal challenges facing our local, state, and governments. But Metro is too important for this region's economy, and too much has been invested to create the system to let it fail now. I agree with Mr. Alpert and applaud Arlington County for proposing a budget that includes an additional WMATA subsidy and advertises a maximum tax rate increase high enough to accommodate even greater levels of subsidy. The other jurisdictions in the WMATA compact should follow Arlington's example. As an Alexandria resident, I am particularly concerned about the elimination of most service on the Yellow Line on weekends and nights, coupled with reductions in the frequency of train service on all other lines. Metro will be unable to meet our city's needs at the time of near record ridership and when the city is considering investing millions of dollars to add a station at Potomac Yard. Finally, the coalition asks the board to put as many options as possible on the table for avoiding service cuts when public hearings are held this spring. This will result in more meaningful input from your riders and hopefully a better outcome. I thank you for the opportunity to appear before you.
Thank you, Mr. Kaplan. Dennis Jaffe.
Thank you. My name is Dennis Jaffe. I'm representing Sierra Club's Sustainable Metro DC campaign. Metro's proposed budget saddles riders with an astounding 70% of the responsibility to close the deficit. It's an unfair, unacceptable burden. At the recent public hearing, Metro riders told the Board of Directors they were willing to step up to the plate to address the $40 million shortfall in the budget year that currently ending. Willing to pay a 10 cents fair surcharge to produce $10 million or 25% of the shortfall. Now riders expect members of the board and all funding partners to step up to the plate and produce a budget that gives everyone their fair share of responsibility to this region. The new budget fails at this. The $89 million fare increase, the $43.7 million in net spending reduction in rail, bus, and Metro Access service add up to $132.9 million. This would make riders responsible for 70% of the deficit reduction measures. The proposed budget asks Maryland, the District of Columbia, and the State of Virginia to take zero responsibility in eliminating the budget deficit. On January 28th, the Board of Directors and General Manager acted responsibly in closing the previous shortfall. In order for federal, state, and local government partners to help preserve Metro's value to the region, they must be asked by the board to do so, as Mr. Zimmerman has twice proposed. If board members do not make crystal clear their belief that Metro's value to the region is worth being preserved by the funding partners, then the members of the board will be responsible for ensuring its deterioration. We call upon each individual member of the board to make the case for federal, state, and local government investment in a fair share Metro budget. On Saturday, the County of Arlington took the first step toward developing a fair share Metro budget by retaining funding options that would spare riders from devastating service cuts. Would silence by leaders representing the District of Columbia signify opposition to the option of producing a fair share Metro budget? Would leaders from the state of Maryland today endorse giving the jurisdictions zero responsibility in eliminating Metro's deficit and giving 70% of that responsibility to riders? Would representatives of Virginia help ensure that funding partners in the region are asked to support a fair share Metro budget? In 2004, the Blue Ribbon Panel on Metro Funding described Metro aptly as the system that binds this region together, the arteries for its economic lifeblood. Sierra Club continues our commitment to make the case to the people that it is federal, state, and local government's collective responsibility to provide the funds that will ensure the health of this region's arteries. Finance Committee Chairwoman Catherine Hudgens declared on February 18th, "We have to decide what does this system mean to the region. We ask the board, when will it decide?" Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jaffe. I understand that Michael Sindrom has shown up and is available. Is he?
Michael syndrome. I just came from the doctor. I'm recuperating from bilateral hernia repair. So I had to get the doctors okay to be here so I don't get beat up too much. Where's Chief Walensky? Is he around? He and I have been dialoguing, and looks like some things are happening. We all know, you know, what's been in the paper here repeatedly, and I brought some extra copies of things happening that are not good, and services decreasing, diminishing, and fares increasing. In the corporate world, Adam Smith, the invisible hand of the marketplace, if you don't perform, you go bankrupt. Truth be told, that Ramada is the only game in town, so it is what it is. We can bash it, but I think it's more importantly that we do a real, heartfelt assessment and get this thing right. What do you think, Councilman Graham? It's long in order for that to happen. The other day, I was on the red line, and I was under the gun to get downtown. For the most part, the train works well. At this particular time, one of the trains were backlogged. What was it, Union Station or Florida Avenue? Not good. The infrastructure needs to be upgraded. Let's do it, because the body count is increasing as we speak, and that ought not be. There is, an interesting article, and I got some multiple copies we can pass around to the board members when I conclude. It appeared in the Epic, and I just want to read a couple brief excerpts. Says your daily riders experience apparently what the board and senior management do not, because they don't have to ride the system. And I think that's important, Mr. Graham and others. Ride the system. Don't just take it through hearsay. See what is happening. See the difficulties, you know, and you can firsthand experience what we're talking about. The dim lighting in most stations is readily dangerous. Inside the car, station announcements by most train operators are garbled and useless. Repeatedly canned station announcements for first-time riders about door and escalator safety encourage deafness to the ones that are needed and spoken by a real human. There may be riders that have just emerged from comas or coal mines, but not many supervisors seem unable to distinguish necessary from desirable information. Nor do they notice the daily inability of most riders to see out the windows because of dim lighting and poor station signage. And inside cars, we are reminded of what line we are on bus, not where we are, what line we are on, but where we are. Even the low-tech and ancient Budapest BKV subway cars from the Soviet Union are able to announce current and coming stations automatically. Ramada buses do this. Why can't its high-tech and expensive subway cars? These things said, obvious improvements are possible, both the policy and operations manager levels that could make this truly an excellent system. At the strategic policy level, leadership and financial stability have been problematic for years. Recent general managers have been mostly invisible to the public, and the sense of the Ramada is a rigidly closed organization that hunkers down from criticism. And that's important. If we stick our head in the sand like an ostrich and say, you know, it's going to go away, it's not, and it's going to get worse. And we're going to have a reoccurrence of what happened to Red Line with that horrific accident. It's time that we step up to the plate, the powers that be, you've been around long enough, and let's deal with this thing. Let's get it right. Let's get the budget in order. Let's get rid of the icing on the cake and deliver a top dollar system. We're in the nation's capital, the world's capital, and we got to have top rate subway experience. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sindrum. That completes all persons who are signed up to comment in the public comment period. We now have before us the agenda. I understand that the Finance and Administration Committee will be suggesting that it have an additional meeting, a special meeting, and a special meeting of the board. So if we can add that to item eight, make it D with that one change, unless there is objection, I will consider the minutes approved. I'm sorry, the agenda approved, which brings us to the minutes. You will note that the minutes are in blue, and that there is a consistent change throughout it, and the change is to show Mr. Graham is voting and Mr. Acosta not as voting. Other than that, I believe there are no changes compared to what has been distributed. Are there any comments, additions, or corrections to the minutes? Mr. Graham.
Since you mentioned my name, what is the change?
Apparently there was an error in the minutes, and Mr. Acosta was listed in each place as voting when, in fact, you did, Mr. Graham. That's been corrected.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Graham.
I've been asked to raise this issue concerning the minutes, and there's apparently some discrepancy relating to the actual term of the surcharge, and the minutes indicate that the board has extended the fare charge surcharge to 2 a.m. July 1, 2010, although there is some discrepancy with the way it's been advertised to end on Saturday, June 26. Can we have this cleared up? Which is it? Is it to end on June 26?
It is June 26, Mr. Graham.
Then why are the minutes reporting that the board resolution extended the fare charge to 2 a.m. July 1, 2010?
Do we have the correct docket? Whatever it says in the docket is what holds.
We'll get the docket and address your issue in a minute.
Okay. All right, thank you. Mr. Graham, would it be acceptable if we made sure that whatever is in the docket is also shown correctly in the minutes?
Yes, I think that would certainly accommodate.
With that correction, are there any other comments or corrections to the minutes?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Zimmerman.
Just on the last one, I assume what we mean is that any discrepancy on the action needs to be corrected. There might, in fact, be a difference in what was said and therefore reflect in the minutes and what was ultimately done. We don't simply want to have the minutes say what we think it ought to have said, but what it actually did say. And then if there's a discrepancy in terms of the action, because for some reason what we thought we were doing in the first place needed to be modified, then we need to appropriately address that.
Given the concern that has been raised by Mr. Zimmerman, although I do not remember us in any way changing the applicability dates, let's make sure that what was said did not in any way change that, and what we will do is postpone action on the minutes until our next meeting.
I will say I don't recall the 2 a.m. July 1 figure as being in anything I said at the time. I think I spoke at, you know, June 30, July 1, which obviously is the two-hour difference. Now, you know, it's a small point, but we should get it right.
We will postpone consideration until that has been carefully checked out and the minutes have been adjusted and distributed to everybody to review. The Riders Advisory Council, Mr. DiBernardo.
Good morning, Chairman Benjamin and members of the board. It is my pleasure today to present you with the Riders Advisory Council's report for February 2010. First, I would like to introduce myself. My name is Frank DiBernardo, and I have the privilege of serving as the 2010 chair of the Riders Advisory Council. As a way of introducing myself, I'd let you know that I do not own a car, so I am dependent on public transportation for all my transit needs, including my daily bus, rail, and bus commute from my home in Greenbelt, Maryland, to my office in Mount Rainier, Maryland. In my day job, I serve as the executive director of New Ways Ministry, a national Catholic organization which attempts to build bridges between the lesbian gay community and the Catholic Church. Perhaps it is because I work at the intersection of religion and sexuality that even the most contentious transportation issues, though certainly very serious, sometimes do not seem as vexing to me as they might to others. But more seriously, I do enjoy my work and value it, my work with the Writers Advisory Council, of which I have been a part since February 2009. As you know, the members are a stellar group of intelligent, concerned, and civic-minded citizens. My election in January as chair for this year was wonderfully complemented by the election of three more than capable vice chairs from each of our major jurisdictions: Victoria Wilder from Maryland, Dom Guruswamy from Virginia, and David Alpert from the District of Columbia, who many of you already know. It is my hope for the coming year that the Writers Advisory Council and the Board of Directors will strengthen its working relationship through more interactive communications. We strive to be a voice for writers, but more importantly, we strive to be a resource for all of you. You have my contact information, and I certainly hope that you will not hesitate to call on me if you have any requests, questions, concerns, or advice for the Writers' Council. Several items are listed in the month's written report, and I'm only going to highlight a few of them for you today. First, we'd like to thank you for passing the proposed changes to the Writers Advisory Council's bylaws last month. We believe that these amendments will help us to work more efficiently and effectively. Second, the Council would like to thank the Board for its quick and decisive action in balancing the FY 2010 budget without resorting to service reductions. Overwhelmingly, the riders at the public hearings asked for fare increases over service reductions, and we appreciate the Board's willingness to take riders' suggestions on this issue. For the FY 2011 budget, as discussed, the Council has convened a budget committee to develop recommendations for the Board in balancing the budget. We welcome any guidance from you as Board members on how to best provide feedback and recommendations for the development of the FY 2011 budget, especially as they relate to increases in fares and reductions in service. The Council does request that, similar to the recent public hearings in balancing the 2010 budget, the Board provide the public with options for comment that exceed the amount of savings needed. Thank you for your time and attention. I look forward to answering any questions you may have.
Are there any questions for Mr. DiBernardo? Mr. Zimmerman.
Mr. DiBernardo, thank you very much for taking on this task for the coming year. Will you be meeting, your council will be meeting next Wednesday?
That's
the normal meeting.
March 3rd.
Mm-hmm. And I expect that you're likely to be discussing some of these issues, particularly the 2011 budget.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I think you may have heard the chairman say that there will be a special meeting of this body next week, at which time we'll be putting out the budget proposals for hearing. And so I assume that if there's anything that you're developing, I mean, you've already made clear a major point, such that you want to see options that go beyond what's in the general manager's proposed budget. Mm-hmm. If you want something else to be considered as we adopt the call for the hearing, which we have to advertise what's actually going to be heard and then acted upon, that would be the opportunity. So somehow, and since you have good staff here who can communicate with us, but it's important that the council members know that we're going to be back the next day to act on it. And so we would need to incorporate anything, if the
board wants to be able to advertise something you're requesting, we'll need to have it in a form we can do that. So it'll be important that that's communicated from the council staff and then staff in a way we can act upon it and decide if we're going to, in fact, put that out the next morning, really. So
right.
Just want to make sure you're aware of that. And
well, our budget committee has a letter drafted and that we're going to vote on at the March 3rd meeting.
And it might be helpful, actually, if it's possible, as those materials are going to council members, perhaps the staff here knows what it is, then they can maybe get ahead of things a little bit and, you know, in anticipation of that. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Zimmerman and Mr. DiBernardo, I did want to note that it was my intention and still is to join the Riders Advisory Council in its meeting next Wednesday to hear some of the things that they do have to say and be able to talk with them about some of the issues if there are any questions they have to answer. I also wanted to thank you for putting some of our discussions and some of our debates in a context that there are much more difficult issues out there, the ones that you you deal with in your professional capacity, and I hope that your ability to deal with those over the years will also extend to your ability to deal with our Riders Advisory Council and help us get some really good suggestions from them to help us in solving our problems.
Thank you. I'll try my best.
We now come to the report by the chairman. I'm doing with this with a little bit of trepidation. This is the point in the year where the new chair is supposed to say something about what personal priorities I may have and which directions we would like to see this this agency go. In our current set of issues, as I said, I say this with a certain amount of trepidation, but let me move ahead anyway. Metro's job is not to run buses and trains. It's to move people, to provide mobility, and to create transportation alternatives for the region. It is to get people to work, to school, to Nationals Park, and to the zoo. Most of the people who ride Metro Bus and Metro Rail are not dependent on transit. They own cars. They will ride Metro only if it is safe, clean, reliable, and comfortable at a reasonable price. To attract these riders, Metro must have a customer focus. We need to value, respect, and listen to our customers because they are why Metro is here. We must make our operational decisions based on how it affects the customer, not on what is easiest for us. We need to plan our maintenance activities to minimize the impact on our riders. We need to make the system simpler to use. We need to provide more and better information to our riders. We also need to have a better understanding by our riders of Metro's limitations. We do have a 34-year-old rail system, which is not like it used to be when it was new. It has old rail cars, track bed, power equipment, and communications. Some of our bus garages are 100 years old, and some buses are 15 years old. As the equipment and facilities age, they become less reliable, break down more often, and need more maintenance. We will have more service disruptions and delays than when the system was new. If there's a serious problem on the rail system during rush hour, we have few options to provide alternative service, and it takes quite a while to set that up. Practically all our buses and operators are already in service, and finding available buses and bringing them to the area of the disruption can take substantial time. Trains hold 600 or more people. Buses hold 50 to 60. So it takes 10 buses to carry the people on one train. By the time any buses arrive, many train loads may have arrived with people looking for alternative service. We are unlikely to be able to provide it. So it's important for us to share the best information we have available and to trust our riders to make their own travel decisions based on what we can provide. However, we frequently do not know early in an incident exactly what has happened and how long it will take to resolve. This means that if we share what we know, our customers will have to forgive us if we change the information as we learn more. Above everything else, we must provide safe service, and in the past year, we have had accidents which have shocked and saddened all of us. We need to change how we handle safety at Metro. The definition of insanity is to keep doing the same thing over and over and expect a different result. We need a new approach. Certainly, safety involves making sure we replace equipment and rehabilitate facilities so they do not slip into disrepair. Safety involves introducing better technology. Safety involves establishing the right procedures and making sure that people follow them. Safety involves training and retraining. Safety involves signage and communication. But most important, safety involves people. Establishing a culture of safety and an attitude of and attention to safety. This in turn requires that not only our customers, but also our employees feel valued, respected, and listened to. Nothing will substitute for a commitment to safety by the people in the field who are actually at risk. We ask a lot of them in performing their duties, and it's difficult for any person to do everything right all the time. But we cannot allow the vigilance associated with safety issues to flag. That's a tall order. This means that it's critical for an operator or mechanic or track worker who had a fight with his spouse before leaving for work or whose favorite cousin just died to set all thoughts of that aside, not be distracted for even a few seconds, and focus on safety while carrying out all the operational aspects of his job. But that is what we must accomplish. And we've asked the U.S. Department of Transportation, the American Public Transportation Association, and the AFL-CIO to assist us in establishing that culture of safety within a broader, comprehensive, and systematic safety program. They have responded. And together, we can make Metro safer. We have no other choice. We must, and we will. Thank you. And we now have the report by the General Manager, Mr. Punt.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. As you noted, the General Manager is at the NTSB hearing. I'm giving a few remarks on his behalf. First, the fare increase that you mentioned earlier, the fares on Metro Rail, Metro Bus, and Metro Access will increase 10 cents effective Sunday, February 28 through June 26. In addition, the fares for senior citizens and people with disabilities will go up 5 cents, and the cost of passes also will increase to help close a shortfall in Metro's FY10 operating budget. To inform customers about the change, Metro has posted stickers on Metro Rail fare vending machines and fare gates, Metro Bus fare boxes, and inside Metro Access vehicles. Announcements are being made in Metro Rail stations, onboard Metro buses, and on the customer service phone line. Advertisements have run in local and Spanish language newspapers. Volunteers are distributing brochures this week at end of the line in downtown Metro stations. And these brochures are in both English and Spanish with information about the new fares. A listing of the specific fare increases and other information is also posted on our website. early this morning, Metro and its regional partners participated in the first of three planned emergency response exercises. During last evening's late night hours and early morning hours. The drill was held at the Friendship Heights Metro Rail station, and the scenario involved a simulated shooting within a station. This drill tested the integrated response and incident coordination needed to react to such an incident in the Metro Transit system. Taking part were Metro's Transit Police Department Special Response Team, Fire and Emergency Medical Services personnel from the District of Columbia and Montgomery County, and the FBI. The emergency response exercises are funded through a $1.2 million grant from the U.S. Department of Homeland Security Urban Area Security Initiative Program. And this grant was obtained by COG through their fire chiefs and is managed by the Arlington County Fire Department. Finally, the regional travel training program for people with disabilities. We have expanded our efforts to teach people with disabilities how to use public transportation by partnering with Centers for Independent Living in the District of Columbia, Maryland, and Virginia, and launching a regional travel training program. This two-year pilot program was launched earlier this week and provides individualized travel training for at least 600 people with significant disabilities who require more than the one-day Metro system orientation that Metro has been providing. A major portion of the project focuses on helping low-income people with significant disabilities to learn how to travel to and from job sites and employment-related activities. Those who complete travel training will receive a free reduced fare smart trip card preloaded with $50 in fare. finally, Mr. Chairman, we come to the employee spotlight.
Why don't we take some questions right now, Mr. Graham?
Thank you very much. Mr. Chairman, I read in this morning's Post for the first time that there was a question raised, and I know you are simply filling in here, and so I'm going to raise this question, and then perhaps we can have a response from staff later. But I do want to raise it today because I read this in this morning's Post for the first time, that there was a question about mixing parts and how there had been a letter from Alston apparently received by this authority warning against a practice that mix non-Alstom parts with Alstom equipment, and how this may have contributed to the June 22nd tragedy. And, you know, obviously I have a reaction on two levels. Number one, why am I reading this in the Washington Post for the first time? And number two, you know, what is the Metro WMATA staff reaction to this? Is there anything you can say about this in terms of Because I have to be a little bit careful about the media. I know that a lot of attention is paid to this, but this was the emphasis that appeared in terms of yesterday's NTSB hearing. So I'd like some response from the staff on this issue, which, you know, we've all been waiting for some, you know, significant message from the NTSB relating to the probable cause, quote unquote, which is the NTSB statutory responsibility of the probable cause of the June 22nd collision and tragedy. And so this appears to be, suggested as one of the possibilities in terms of explaining what happened that day. So I'd like some reaction to this today and then some further reaction once our general manager is back at the agency.
Mr. Chairman, the only thing I can mention is that I was at the NTSB hearing yesterday, and the letter that Alstom entered into the record was a one-page letter that went to a variety of transit properties. So it was a one-page letter. It was addressed to Dear Transit Property and had a 19-page distribution list of that letter. And they had sent this letter in 2004. To all the properties, and that's what was entered into the record, and that's what you saw in the newspaper. There were questions raised at the hearing of our staff, and staff is, you know, going to research that. The staff that they mentioned it to did not recall getting that letter, but they are looking at it, and we'll certainly get back to the board with a response on it.
May I request through you that we be provided copies of this documentation?
Yes.
So that we can see for ourselves what this is all about.
I certainly agree. I would note, Mr. Pond, I believe, as it was characterized to me, the letter began, "Dear valued customer," as opposed to "Dear transit official." which gives you a sense of what that letter may have been, and also it was not introduced into the record at any time, or it had not become part of this investigation at an earlier stage, which you would have expected one of the parties to the investigation to have done. So it would be very helpful if we as the board did see a copy of what has now been introduced into the record and appears by some accounts to be very significant and by others. I would note that the chair of the investigation felt that it was inappropriate to comment on the value of this particular letter since that would be analysis.
Right. We'll get the letter to you.
Are there any other comments, Mr. Zimmerman?
Question. Mr. Chairman, the board has received this month a report from the Inspector General. It's you know, a routine report, but in it, the Inspector General notes that that there are three information technology related audit reports identifying internal control weaknesses relating to the lack of contract and management oversight over information technology projects and WMATA's information security program. Failure to address these weaknesses increases WMATA's risk that projects are not completed satisfactorily and or that the security program does not operate as intended. And in the report, there's a table on page 8 that is headed recommendations described in previous SAR semi-annual reports on which corrective action has not been completed as of December 31st, 2009. The three items that are referred to there, I believe, are the ones that head that table. And then there are some dates associated with them that were, says latest target date per WMATA corrective action plan, one of which, one of these items was January, one is next month, and one is some months later. In any case, I don't really know what these things are based on, you know, the cursory description here, but I certainly, gets my attention when something says that there are corrective actions necessary without which, you know, without which the security program does not operate as intended. And so I'm wondering what is happening with regard to those. And, you know, at least for the one item that is described, which is a review of TRAPEZ, the bus rail scheduling dispatch system, the corrective action was supposed to be dated for January 2010. The date of this report, although it was delivered last month, is for closing in December. So, you know, did that happen? And where are we on the others? And is there anything we can be told about what's happening to correct these
failures? Ms. Liu, would you like to comment on those items?
Yeah, I'll be glad to comment on those items. First of all, I think Director Zimmerman's reference to this table, I think it's table one, and those are reports that were listed or issued in previous semi-annual report. So the relationship of those items in table one are not the three reports.
Well, these aren't the three. These are three other
ones. These are not. These are three. The three that you mentioned are new reports that were issued in the past 6 months. That is from July 1 to December 31st of 2009. Table one refers to reports that were issued prior to July 1, where there are still open recommendations. And the one that you mentioned on TRAPEZ has a January 2010 date. The Transit Authority did provide us something after our deadline request, and we are in the process of analyzing that. So they have something in progress right now. We'll report in the next quarterly report whether that outstanding recommendation has been closed up. But the three reports that you mentioned that we issued July 1 to December 31st, one is on PeopleSoft, one is on information technology, user access, and the last one is on MarTech. And they're all related to information systems.
Thank you for that clarification, but I guess that clarifies my question. Nonetheless, the question stands. Do you know where we stand on correcting these problems?
Ms. Kissel? I can address that. Both of those audit reports were provided to myself and Suzanne Peck. PeopleSoft, and we can actually provide the board with a very comprehensive action plan, which we have done to mitigate each one of these. But in summary, I can tell you that for the PeopleSoft audit, we've actually put together an assessment financial systems integration project, which has been completed as of last week, and we're in the stages of implementing. So without going through a lot of the detail, we actually have already progressed on the PeopleSoft integration issues that were pointed out by the Inspector General. As far as the IT user security, that mitigation plan has been put in place as well. This was regarding security for user access to systems that we currently have, and implementing a process to make sure as people were moving from jobs to different jobs or leaving the agency that we had a process in place to actually eliminate their user access. That mitigation plan is being put in place with Suzanne Peck and with procurement, and actually we're in response to the Inspector General on that. And then on the last item, MarTech, I believe actually we sent a response to the Inspector General on the MarTech. I'm asking the Inspector General, but I...
That one is still open right now.
Okay.
We provide a quarterly report to the Subcommittee on Audits and Investigation that gives a quarterly status of where we are on open recommendations.
On the MarTech, actually, if we have not provided that, that is in process, and that actually is working with IT and procurement on some of the items that the Inspector General highlighted on the procurement under the MarTech heading project. So we actually have very specific mitigation plans which we can provide the board at any time.
Actually, what I'm most interested in is the IG has identified these weaknesses.
Mm-hmm.
You're telling me you're looking to address them.
No, I'm telling you that we've either implemented mitigation plans on one, if not two, of these areas, and I don't have the comprehensive data in front of me. I did not expect to report on a mitigation plan, an action plan for these items.
Which I'm not asking for.
But we have implemented some of the procedures and processes and controls that the Inspector General has pointed out, yes.
I guess I'm wondering at what point we can know that the Inspector General agrees that you have corrected the problem.
Mm-hmm.
I do that in the quarterly reports that I send to the Subcommittee on Audits and Investigation. And I know Mr. Director Giacola here had asked me to provide all the board members with a copy of that quarterly report very recently.
Could I step in here for a moment? Let's see if we can get this one finished. Ms. Kissel, I heard you use the word some and in the process of mitigation, so I presume that you have not completed whatever you're doing and submitted a report to the Inspector General.
Not 100%,
is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, and do you expect to do that sometime soon?
We expect to do that within the time frame that the Inspector General has provided to us.
Do you know what that is for these?
I don't have that in front of me right now.
But you will, in fact, respond within the time frame that has been established for these reports and submit them to the Inspector General?
That's correct.
And asking Ms. Liu, the Inspector General, do you have any concerns about that?
No. They have either implemented their corrective action plan or they have them in progress. And what I do is I keep the board informed on what that status is. We put in our quarter report when is the estimated completion date per management. If they change that date, we put an asterisk on the report. If they did not meet it, the day would have elapsed. So that's how we keep the board informed.
May I request on behalf of the board that on these three items that were raised by Mr. Zimmerman, that we be informed should you either A, slip the date, or B, you get an adequate response and so determine?
We will.
Does that take care of it, Mr. Zimmerman?
I suppose so. And you know, Mr. Chairman, I really didn't want to belabor something that may be very technical and all that, but frankly, when you read the description that is in the Inspector General's report, you get a clear picture that this is about the security of the data that this organization holds. Data about individuals, payroll data, financial data. And you know, when something is delivered to my desk that says, we've identified a weakness that could endanger that, then it tells me I have some responsibility to see that something's being done about it. And I know that eventually there'll be a report filed somewhere that'll say it's closed and all that, but if this is put on my desk, then I think I'm obliged to ask about it. And, you know, at least here, yes, we're taking care of it, or it's been taken care of it, or will be taken care of by this date. And to hear the official who's in charge of, you know, independently overseeing that say, yes, it has been done satisfactorily, or if not, we've got another problem. So I just want to make sure that somebody tells the board, yes, it's been done, and the Inspector General has a chance to confirm that that's the case.
I think that's exactly what we've just heard. Ms. Kissel has said that they are in the process of taking the corrective actions and that they will report those by the date that they said they would, and Ms. Liu will confirm that, and we've asked for that information to be sent to the board. Is there any other information relative to this? I don't question your having raised it. I just want to make sure that, in fact, what you've asked for is being done.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Mr. Graham. I hadn't planned on raising this issue, but it has come to my mind on several occasions, particularly since June 22nd. Could we have a report from the Inspector General? It may not be appropriate now and probably isn't, but on what initiatives she has taken relating to the safety challenges of this agency and whether or not she is prepared to have the staff capacity and other capacities to oversee the implementation of the recommendations which we're anticipating from the NTSB on the collision on June 22nd. I mean, these are the pressing issues of this agency, and I'd like to have a better understanding of what are the initiatives that the Inspector General has taken in this regard, particularly in the last 6 to 7 months.
Mr. Giancola, this is one of those items that you would be working on. Would you please work with the Inspector General and take whatever information she has and report it back to the board, please?
Yes, in fact, we've actually had initial discussions on that when we got the listing from the previous report from the independent group, the TOC reports, and we've asked the IG to look at that. So, yes, that's a continuing item.
Thank you very much, Mr. Giancola. Mr. Graham, anybody else? I think we've gotten to the next part of your report, Mr. Pond.
Yeah, the final part is the employee spotlight. And today in the employee spotlight, we'd like to recognize three outstanding Metro Transit Police Department officers. Officers Stephen Peoples, David Hathaway, and Andrew Toplin are being recognized for successfully pursuing and arresting an assailant who attacked a customer at a Metro Transit station. When the individual was caught, he was in possession of drugs and drug paraphernalia. And further investigation also revealed that the individual was a suspect in several robberies throughout the Washington, D.C. area. So I'd like the Officer Peoples, Hathaway and Toplin, and Chief Delinsky to come and join you, Mr. Chairman.
Is there anything else, Mr. Pond?
That completes my report, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, the report by the Finance and Administration Committee, Ms. Hudgens, and we do have an additional item on this one.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, the Finance and Administration Committee met on February 18th, and the following are results of actions from the board, forwarded to the board. The Roslyn Station entrance, the staff has requested approval to establish a reimbursable project to construct a new Roslyn Rail Station entrance, and the authorization for the general manager to execute an agreement. Mr. Chairman, I move approval of a resolution.
So moved and seconded by Mr. Zimmerman. Any comments, questions? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no.
The second action item being brought to the board from the committee is the item on at-will employment. Staff is requesting to approval to expand the population of non-represented at-will employees across Metro to include all middle-level supervisors and managers in salary grades 12 through 15. Mr. Chairman, I am going to place the item on the table. I move approval of a resolution, and then I would like to raise a question.
Ms. Hudgens is moving. Is there a second? Seconded by Mr. Graham and Ms. Hudgens.
This item was brought as part of the general manager's effort to move forward on some of the personnel actions that would be a part of making adjustments in the budget. An item that has come for question since the meeting that I'd like to ask if we could provide the board with some data on is the annual leave process for the at-will employees, and it is the credit aspect. Can you give us any data on how that is used and what the history is?
Yes. The population that we're discussing here for these at-will employees represents about 253 people at the agency currently. If you looked at their average 10-year, it's in the high range of about 15 years on average of the tenure that they have. Given that, most of the employees under that umbrella would have earned their maximum amount of leave. If the board implements this policy where the leave is earned, half of the leave is earned, 50% if you will, in the first half of the calendar year, we've looked at doing a risk assessment based upon the assumption, what if everybody left and took advantage of that, which we don't think in all probability would occur. So what we did was we looked at our current attrition rates. Current attrition rates here at Metro are about 4%. So if you look at the 4%, that would assume that 10 people could possibly take a retirement on January 1 when they would have earned or accrued half of their leave. If that did happen, then the cost to the authority would be very negligible. And if we looked at the biggest impact, it could be, and I had given you numbers earlier, Ms. Hudgens, Supervisor Hudgens, but actually it's a lot lower than that, probably less than $50,000. And that's how we actually did the risk assessment on the cost of implementing a benefit such as this.
And just a clarification, the purpose of this is relative to the amount of time that these types of employees are able to take advantage of their leave, and it is one way of providing them a greater opportunity for their relative difficult halls of work that they have to do.
That's true. I mean, if you're actually taking away a benefit that most of these tenured employees have had, actually you're taking away, putting them at will status for the reasons that you stated that the general manager wanted to provide more accountability. Then we thought we wanted to try to give something back, and this was a way to do that on earned credit.
Thank you.
Mr. Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to speak to the premise of the at-will, not the other issue, and I will support the resolution, but I would like to put it in a framework. As presented, it is identified as a safety-related measure with the opportunity to terminate a supervisory employee who has not practiced the things we need. That's probably one piece of an overall change in safety culture. I would hope it is a very small piece. I don't think you get a safety culture effectively through fear. That may be a part of it, but I think we really have to put it in that broader context that you talked about this morning and see, is this a useful tool, but how many other things can we put in place to really change the culture in the agency?
Thank you, Mr. Downey. Yes, I agree that I wouldn't like to see this as being labeled what we're doing to improve safety. It's got to be something much broader. Are there any other comments?
Mr. Zimmerman has a question.
Mr. Zimmerman.
I appreciate Mr. Downey's comments. This does seem to involve two different things. There's the expansion of at will, and then there's this other thing which is described as being budgetary related. So the first part, the at will, is not budget. It's not a matter of the budget.
No.
This has to do with this first part has to do with dismissal for cause.
That's correct.
And how many people would, you know, how many actual positions are we talking about?
253.
Who now could not be summarily dismissed for cause.
That's correct.
All right, so we can take that for what it is, that it's part of an overall approach to sort of increasing discipline and is not something that people should expect necessarily gets exercised tomorrow on a budgetary basis.
That's correct.
It's free of any relation to reduction in force. And since that issue has been raised, let me ask you to clarify, Mr. Pont or Ms. Kissel, pursuant to actions that we've taken to correct the FY 2010 budget gap, what is the status of reductions in force in the organization right now?
As of last week, we actually implemented a RIF last Thursday, where we actually eliminated 45 filled positions and about a dozen vacant positions. And that is the most current status. We took those across departments. The way we processed that was we actually looked at each department and required that they eliminate or reduce their manpower. And each department head, each ELT member, provided a decreased scope from their amended approved budget and then provided things that they could eliminate, and they actually put together headcount or positions that could be eliminated as a result of this request.
In the current economy, obviously, this is happening in lots of organizations.
It's happening,
but you're
yes.
telling me the 45 people were told there isn't going to be a job for them here anymore. Could you just tell me briefly what we do for people in that position in this organization?
We typically, what we physically do when we lay
well,
people.
I mean, for instance, I know in my organization, you know, there are a number of measures like we, you know, provide them the opportunity for
yes.
transfer to a position that may become vacant within the organization. We provide various kinds of assistance and counseling. There's usually some period of time for them, you know, to deal with this or adjust before they actually have to leave, you know, various things like that. How are we treating these folks?
In general, we provide all of the above. Most of the 46 people, I don't have the breakdown with me, and maybe Delisha Sampson can come up and tell you, but I will tell you briefly that the positions are a combination of non-representative positions and representative positions. If they are representative positions, meaning in a union, they actually have an opportunity to, it's called a bumping, yes, I couldn't, thank you. It's a bumping process. So seniority would rule, and they would actually, if they had the qualifications with another position that had that same job description, they could bump that person out of that job if they had a seniority
okay.
status.
Leaving that aside now and relating more to the item that is before us, if we have employees who are at will, either they were or would be under this.
Right. So you're talking about non-rep people.
Sure.
Non-representative people. And we actually, I'll have Delisha here who can tell you all of these
and
services.
I don't want to divert us from the main topic
mm-hmm.
here. And so, you know, I can wait for more detail. But I really just want to understand briefly,
mm-hmm.
if we're not talking about a situation which is a, you know, disciplinary measure,
mm-hmm.
then those who are at will, I presume, would be treated with some kind of, you know, respect and dignity when we're making a budgetary move for someone who otherwise would still be employed here.
There's no doubt about that.
Okay.
We
thank
actually,
you for clarifying.
Yeah, we have a RIF committee. We have people who speak to these people about the layoff. We treat actually every individual with respect that they deserve. and actually try to implement that as we, you know, riff each position. And we provide all other services in terms of counseling for other future jobs. I know particularly in a couple of instances that people have been told beforehand that they would be riffed, and they have already secured jobs with the federal government. The HR department does a great job, because the federal government is hiring, to get those people other positions. So they actually go beyond, you know, what they actually are required to do.
Thank you very much.
Are there any other questions or comments, and are we ready to vote? This has been properly moved and seconded. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No.
The last item, first of all, the board, the committee had two information items presented, one on the capital budget and two on the operating budget and the general manager's budget. Much discussion came out of that, and subsequent to that, there has been a desire to change the calendar as we presented in the finance committee and to move for an earlier advertisement of the budget. Therefore, Mr. Chairman, I would like to move that the board schedule a special finance committee meeting and WMATA board meeting on March 4th at 10 a.m. And the purpose of that meeting will be to discuss the details of the advertising of the general manager's 2011 budget. And that includes all of the regulatory requirements for advertising, fare increase, and to include the metro access issues in terms of the options that will be available. But it will be a full, it allows us a full meeting.
Moved by Ms. Hutchins. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Ms. Hewlett.
I wanted to say that our effort in bringing forth a special meeting and moving that calendar is this gives us an opportunity to get the information out, announce the public hearings as quickly as possible, reach our jurisdictional members as quickly as possible. And as you heard today, the public has already begun to address this budget. And I think what we would like to do is provide as much information and latitude, recognizing that what we will be advertising, we would expect would be the general manager's budget, but with enough latitude in the advertisement to build in any solutions that we think would be appropriate.
Ms. Hutchins, let me just clarify that you said that we were going to have a meeting of the Finance Oversight and Administration Committee at 10 o'clock on the 4th, is that right?
That's
to be followed by a board meeting, both being special meetings, which would be immediately after the Finance Administration Oversight. That has been moved and seconded. Are there any comments? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. That one has passed. Item C. Did you do that one?
I did them all. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't miss.
Okay.
I went ahead of that one. This one is necessary in order to comply with the federal regulations regarding the elderly and disabled. And what we are doing here is providing a series of adjustments that must be made to the FY 2010 fare increase, and as was advertised. And I therefore would move approval of a revision to the surcharge for the rail trips for senior citizens, people with disabilities, from 10 cents to 5 cents to conform to the federal regulations. And I'm going to put these serial together as one motion. And the revision to the surcharge for local and express metro trips for the senior citizens and people with disabilities of 10 cents to 5 cents to conform with the regulations. And the DC student 10 trip fare card from the amount approved on January 28, 09 of $8.80 for 10 trips to $8.50 for 10 trips due to the constraints of the fare collection system. And finally, the price of the DC student tokens 10-pack from the amount approved on January 28, 2010 of $6.85 for 10 trips to $6.75 for 10 trips. I so move approval, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, so moved and seconded by Ms. Hewlett. I would just note that in the resolution that's before us, we also have the 2 o'clock a.m. July 1st, 2010 language in the third whereas, which was the one that was brought up previously as being potentially a problem. Whereas below, it talks about June 30th on each one of the items. So could staff indicate what which one is correct and what needs to be changed?
What we need to approve today.
I have to, actually, it's a... I believe it's going to be July 1st, and let me check. I'm just thinking because the it's actually how we implement the fares and our system structure. So can I get back to the board on the technical, that specific technical date?
Well, we'll have to postpone acting on this resolution then.
Just a moment. I just need to.
Want to wait until after what, the customer.
I'm just looking to.
What we can do is just hold this one for a few minutes while you analyze it. Would you also, while you're doing that,
yes,
take a look at the original resolution and make sure that the two were identical?
We will do that.
Okay, so we know whether we're doing June 30th or the extra 2 hours into July 1st, which would seem to relate to a late close.
A late close, that's what I'm...
Or Mr. Chairman, in another place it says June 26th,
yes,
which would be a considerable days. Problem to lower the fare and put it back in place for 3 days.
That's the point that I raised earlier.
Yeah.
Yes.
And right. So we really need a consistent date.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, can I make one other Mr. comment? At the last board meeting, when this item was raised, I specifically asked whether the elderly and disabled fares had been correctly presented, because they were obviously wrong, and I'm glad we're seeing it corrected, but I hope we'll see better work in the future.
Amen. Mr. Chairman, okay. For the time's sake, we can defer that item and come back after customer service.
Mr. Chairman, I think we do have...
You do have it? Okay.
Mr. Hughes.
It is June 26th.
Mr. Hughes, have you also looked at the original resolution so that you give us the entire thing? We want to be consistent with the original or change the original.
They're all June 26th.
Yeah.
This is the original. Members of the board, the intent is to, I'll read the resolution, the intent is to have the surcharge, because we do fare increases over a Sunday morning to reflect our ridership. That's why we're implementing it this Sunday, not the first of the month as opposed to. So we want to terminate it on Saturday night into Sunday morning. That's the 2 a.m. That's why it's listed there. But it is June 27th, I believe. I'm checking the date that's here. The original resolution said that the surcharge would go in on or about March 1st. We're implementing on the day before, which is February 20th, and then it would end on or about July 1st, because as we were getting the resolution ready, we were just picking the beginning of the month, but a fare increase goes in on Sunday morning. So Sunday in June, the last Sunday in June, is June 27th.
Well, let me request that we not try and do this right now, that we have council sit together with Mr. Hughes, and come up with a clear set of changes to this resolution so that it is consistent throughout, and come back and give it to us before the end of this meeting. Okay? Thank you. And we will defer taking action. Does that complete your report, Ms. Hutchins?
Thank you, it does.
Mr. Zimmerman, the Customer Service Operations and Safety Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The committee met on February 18th and has two action items to bring to you, one of which was addressed in public comment earlier. They are both involve ART proposals for two stations. The first involves the Tacoma Metro station. That's the one that was spoken to earlier. And staff has requested approval to accept a donation of public art funded by the D.C. Commission on the Arts and Humanities for installation at the Tacoma Metro Rail Station underpass, and to authorize the general manager to enter into an agreement to accept and maintain the artwork. The board has also at that time asked for some changes to the resolution, but otherwise moved it forward. The resolution, as so amended, is before you. And on behalf of the committee, I move its approval.
Moved by Mr. Zimmerman, seconded by Mr. Giancola. Are there any comments?
Members may wish to address the, it's a DC matter, so I defer to them.
Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That one passes.
The second item concerns the Farragut West Metro Station. Staff had requested approval to accept a donation of public art funded by the DC Commission on the Arts and Humanities and the Golden Triangle Business Improvement District for installation at the Farragut West Metro Station. That also is before you with the appropriate resolution. The committee recommends approval, and on behalf of the committee, I do so move.
Moved by Mr. Zimmerman. Is there a second? Mr. Graham. Seconded by Mr. Graham. All in favor, any comment on this one? All in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed, no. That one passes. That moves us then to administrative items. Is there a motion to approve all four en bloc? So moved by Mr. Graham.
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Zimmerman. Any comment on any of these?
No.
Mr. McKay, and then Mr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question on administrative item number three. Because the way I read this is this contract was awarded in 2008 for $8.5 million, and this is a $1.3 million option, but it doesn't describe anywhere in this item what we get for that option. In fact, the way it's worded is it almost sounds like a continuation of what we're already getting in the original contract. So tell me in plain English specifically what we get as an enhancement for the $1.3 million option.
Ms. Peck?
I'd be delighted, Mr. McKay. Metronet is the successor voice and data fiber network for Metro, replacing an earlier network. Currently, that project is 75% complete. The completed project elements are the design, the deployment, and the maintenance of the core fiber network, the routers, the switches, and the fiber for that network at JGB and CTF, and the design of those routers, switches, and fiber elements to the network for the rail stations, for the rail yards, which were not planned in the original budget, and for the bus garages. So for the $1.3 million, which is your specific question, those are the funds required in FY10 and through FY11 and 13 to complete another 10% of the project. And those will provide, where we've already designed them, the deployment and the maintenance of the Metronet routers, switches, and fibers for the remaining rail stations, rail yards, which were not planned in the original budget, and bus garages. And in the case for DC, for some modest power upgrades for backup and for some modest software upgrades as well for that network.
So those modest upgrades were not envisioned when the original $8.5 million contract was awarded?
No, the software upgrades were a part of the project envisioned for this time period. They were. The part that wasn't envisioned was the extension of that voice and data network out to the rail yards as well as the rail stations.
Okay. So seeing as the options that came with the original $8.5 million were $1.3 million total, is that obviously, you know, what we're awarding here is $650,000. Is the $1.3 million total in options envisioned to have to be completely executed?
What we're asking for today, we have the budget. We already have the budget.
Oh, I understand that.
Money. We're simply asking for the spending authority on that 1.3. And the 650 is in a multi-year project, a project that we envision as being two more years of deployment. We're 75% designed and have immediate deployment. We've now got two more years of deployment. Those funds that we're requesting now are to give us the $650,000 portion of the deployment, which we will do in this year, and then the $638,000 remaining will be for the next budgetary year. And we're asking for the spending authority for both of those years where we already have the budgetary authority.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. McKay. Mr. Downey.
Yes, a question on item four, contract for accounting services. As I read it, it's more process for myself than substance, but I read it to say you have taken proposals from five firms, but you are not at this point indicating who will receive the contract.
That's correct. We're asking for authority to issue the notice to proceed.
Among those five, based on your judgment as to which one would do the best job, or?
Yes, it's gone through an evaluation committee, and they've actually, I believe, selected someone. We're asking for authority to initiate that action.
Okay.
Award, excuse me.
Award. Any other questions on these four items, which have been moved and seconded? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Which brings us to our reports. Report by DC, Mr. Graham. No report from DC. From WSTC, Mr. Linton. Thank you. Mr. Solomon is not here. NVTC, Ms. Hudgens.
No report,
Mr. Chairman.
And I think I'd like, I'm sorry. Okay, this is part of the NVTC report.
Yes. Well,
okay.
Could be anything. We don't have a TPP report, but I do think it should be noted that since the last time we were here, the federal administration announced the Tiger Grant awards, and most people have probably seen that. The fact that this region was one of the lucky winners of 1,400 applications totaling some $60 billion for what were only $1.5 billion to give out, and only 51 that were awarded. We did succeed in getting an award at higher than the average, about $59 million. The reason it particularly should be mentioned here is that the component of the proposal that went in from the Transportation Planning Board with significant WMATA participation, the component that was funded, the major component, is for bus priority enhancements. It's all part of a bus priority network. It is largely a WMATA proposal, and WMATA clearly will have a significant role in implementing this. And since we got the award, and it is part of stimulus, there will now be, milestones that will have to be met. We actually have to go spend the money now, and there'll be a plan coming to do this. But it is going to be relevant to operations here, and is an opportunity to enhance the services that we provide to bus riders in the region.
Thank you, Mr. Zimmerman. I also think that in this set of reports, we ought to add the federal government, since they're now represented on the board. Mr. Downey, do you have any report?
Mr. Chairman,
I've
just been reminded that on March the 18th at 10 a.m., the committee I chair at the D.C. Council, which is Public Works and Transportation, will hold its performance oversight hearing on Metro WMATA at 10 o'clock at 1350 Pennsylvania Avenue.
Okay. Are there any other reports? If not, I declare this meeting, and without objection, I declare. I'm sorry, we got one of our other item. Thank you. The item that was deferred, my apologies. We're back to revisions to the 2010 fare increase, which is item C under section 8, finance. Do you have the changes?
We do, and I'm going to allow council to read the changes because we actually, when we did this, we realized we had to make another subsequent change, and I'll have Bruce take you through it.
I suspected as much.
Just to clarify, the resolution that is before you at the moment is to take cognizance of Mr. Downey's correct concerns about the special treatment for elderly and disabled, the 10 cent increase versus the 5 cent increase. But in looking at that, we went back and looked at the underlying resolution that was approved January 28, 2010, resolution 2010-06, which said, this is the old one, resolved that the Board of Directors approves increases to Metro Bus, Metro Rail, Metro Asset fees to begin on or about February 28th, 2010, and to terminate at 2 a.m. July 1st, 2010. So what I'm about to propose is to make sure that they're all in sync. So I'm about to propose a fix of that prior of the effective dates in the prior resolution to be consistent so that the overall
fare increase is consistent with the specific fare increase that we're now putting before you for elderly and handicapped. And I want to make just one more clarification based on Mr. Hughes's representations that this responds to a concern that one that was raised, that we expect to have a seamless transition in the way the fare increases are handled, that when the surcharge lapses on June 27th, we will immediately go to the new fare increase, if that is what is elected, following the whole public hearing process. So it will just be an end of the 10-cent or 5-cent surcharge, and then if the board does approve ultimately a fare increase, that we will move into that at the very at the same time as this surcharge lapses. So the surcharge lapses on Sunday morning, the end of the service that began Saturday on so that Saturday is June 26th, although our service continues, you know, into the early morning hours. But when service begins that Sunday morning, June 27th, that would be when, if there are fare increases, that's when the fare increases would begin. So I hope I've said that all right.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay, so.
Mr. Happen, would you wait for a moment?
Yes, sir.
You're saying that instead of July 1st in the whereas, I always hate it when things like that are in whereases. It is June 27th, is right? So 2 o'clock a.m., June 27th?
Well, I'd like to say to terminate, and Mr. Hughes and I had an extensive discussion because of the way service works, and particularly late-night service on the weekends for Metro Rail. So what we'd like to say up front on the whereas, on the third paragraph, to begin on or about February 28, 2010, and to terminate prior to the beginning of service on Sunday, June 27, 2010.
Prior to the beginning of service.
And that same language, ending prior to the beginning of service on Sunday, June 27, 2010, will appear then in each of the following resolved clauses in place of where it said June 30th, 2010.
So when you define a period there, it will use the same language as in the whereas?
Yes.
In each one of the three places?
Four places, because there's a carryover on the back.
Oh, sorry, which one of the four places?
And
you are going to go back and fix the original resolution, yes? Because it doesn't say that.
Do you mean?
The 28th, January
20th. Yes. Okay.
Can I say it?
We can, or we can actually just add the paragraph.
I was going to propose simply an additional
yeah.
paragraph.
By doing that here.
Yes.
You don't have to recast that one. All we're
correct.
Saying is
put it in here.
Correct in this one, which is what you're doing.
Yes. And then
right.
There's,
sorry.
I want to be clear, nobody has actually yet approved the language I'm about to read to you, but I hope everyone's going to nod all right. approves a clarification of the effective date of the fare increases approved on January 28th, 2010 per resolution 210-06 to make clear that those fare increases terminate prior to the beginning of service on Sunday, June 27th, 2010.
Mr. Happen, can we just make it a parallel construction to all the others just to say that we're modifying that one to begin on the following date?
Yes.
And rather than making anything clear,
okay.
Just if that would be possible. You don't need to write it right now, but can we just have a parallel structure that changes that and refers to the, as you have referred to in this one?
Yes, Mr. Benjamin.
Okay. And Ms. Hutchins.
I'm going to ask that you print a copy of that to give to us as soon as possible, so that we can feel comfortable after this motion that
yeah.
we will not need to leave the room or the building until we have been clear, because that's what we need today, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I assume as well, when we work on fares past that date, we'll put in the 27th as
right.
the starting date. And will that fit with budget process and calendar process? Legally?
Well, I have to look
so
at
it would have to be in the notice, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman,
that they give us.
Let's get the response and then.
I believe the board approves the fiscal year 2011 budget prior to the end of the fiscal year. And as a result, we can actually include as a part of that approval that the new fare increase would then take effect as of the 27th.
Okay, Mr. Zimmerman.
Okay, and the key point here is not the approval in June, but what we do next week, 7 days from now, because we have to make sure that the advertisement for the hearing on fare increases reflects the need to raise them if we're going to do so on the date that this surcharge terminates. So if we've figured out what day that is, it's not critical which one it is, frankly, but it is critical that we can get them to match. So that we're not. So if we advertise something next week that says July 1, then we're going to have left this hold, and we'll have three rates inside of a week, and we certainly don't want to be doing that. So the important thing is that by next Thursday, we've had this conversation now, and we know what it is we have to advertise and what date those fares would begin on. We're not making the mistake of saying July 1.
I think Mr. Pont, Ms. Kissel, Mr. Heppen, what you have heard from the board just now was substantial concern about the fact that materials that were presented to us, and we understand you sometimes are rushing to do these things in order to get them to us, but materials that were presented to us had substantial errors in them, some of which were identified actually by some board members, and that we continued to have to correct those as we go. We do really need quality production and quality control and quality assurance from our staff that as we receive these things, they are in fact correct and that we're not going back and taking actions afterwards to fix errors we made previously. So I think that message just came through from several board members. Are we ready to vote? Okay, with the changes that Mr. Heppen has just described, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No. This one then does move through, and I guess our minutes are correct, but we'll deal with them at the next meeting. Unless there's any further business to come before us, I declare this meeting adjourned. I already